Good morning, everyone, and welcome to ECL's third quarter 2015 results conference call. If you need a copy of the press release issued yesterday, it is available on the company's website at www.ecl.cl. Before we begin, I would like to remind you that this call is being recorded and that information discussed today may include forward-looking statements regarding the company's financial and operating performance. All projections are subject to risks and uncertainties, and actual results may differ materially. Please refer to the detailed note in the company's press release regarding forward-looking statements. We would like to advise participants that this call is dedicated to investors and market analysts, not for the press. We ask all journalists to contact ECL's PR department for details. I will now turn the call over to Mr. Carlos Freitas. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, operator, and good morning, everybody. I'm pleased to be here to announce to you the results for the first 9 months of this year. I'm here with Bernardita Infante, the Deputy CFO of ECL and Head of Finance, and also with Marcela Muñoz, the Investor Officer of the company. I hope you all have in front of you the presentation that we uploaded to our webpage yesterday morning. If we can go through the page number three, you can see that our EBITDA reached $249 million during the first 9 months of this year, which was a 2% increase over the same period of last year. This, despite the reduction in revenues for the indexation of our PPAs of 8% in revenues, we had an increase in EBITDA of 2%. And this basically for two main reasons. One is that we have a very good operational performance during the first 9 months of this year, but also the positive foreign exchange rate effect on our costs in Chilean pesos. As you all know, the Chilean peso has devalued against the dollar throughout this year, so we had less costs in dollars in our P&L. On a net income perspective, the bottom line amounted to $72 million in the first 9 months of this year, which was a 15% decrease compared to the same period of last year, basically because we had two, I would say, non-recurrent effects. One is the tax one that I'm going to explain a bit later, but also some foreign exchange losses because of this huge devaluation of the Chilean peso. For certain assets that we had and we have on our balance sheet in pesos, that today are worth less dollars. On a net debt perspective, the net debt started to increase basically because our cash position is now a bit lower than in the past. Our gross debt is basically the same, but our net debt is now higher by 16%. And this is because we are investing a lot of cash on our expansion plan, as you all know. So net debt now at $555 million is still pretty much comfortable against our EBITDA in the last 12 months. If we please move to the next slide, number four, the highlights, the non-financial highlights, I would say, for this last quarter. The first one, I think, is very relevant. The panel of experts here in Chile confirmed the ETT numbers of $738 million as the trunk asset base for the 10 line. As you know, 10 has been declared a trunk asset here in Chile. We were in the process of knowing the allowed asset base of the company, which is now confirmed at $738 million, as of the ETT FX date, which is October of 13. So with this, we know already that the annual trunk revenue of 10 will be around $76 million per year as of now. So the, as of September of this year, with the indexation of now, the amount of revenue that we are going to get in the future from 10 regulated revenues will be $760 million. On the construction side, IEM-1, including the coal plant and the new port, as well as 10 itself, are progressing well according to schedule. So on schedule, on budget, and on scope. So everything progressing according to what was foreseen. We had in Mejillones 2 months ago, beginning of September, our first investor day, which I think it was a good opportunity for the ones who went there to see our operations and to have a in-loco view of where how we operate and how we can where we're going to improve our operations in the future with IEM and 10. We also paid dividends last Friday for $13.5 million, which represented 30% of our net income for the first half of this year, in line with the policy that was approved by the board of paying less dividends when we have more capex and paying more dividends when we have less capex. So now we have a lot of capex, so we're paying only 30% of our net income. And finally, at the end of September, Mr. Juan Cavalier resigned for personal reasons from the board of ECL. He was replaced by as chairman of ECL by Mr. Felipe Knut, who is the regional manager for ENGIE in LATAM. So he's here, living here in Santiago now for some time. He is taking over as chairman of ECL as from beginning of October. Moving forward, I propose that we jump to page number 8, because the previous one are pretty much known. Page number 8, just to highlight that we are, we all know that the copper prices are low, but here in Chile, the cost, cash costs for the mines are pretty low. And what we have seen is, in fact, an increase in the consumption of energy in the zinc throughout this year. We think that this year there will be more or less a 7% increase in consumption in the zinc compared to last year. For next year, it should be a little bit less. So for next year, what we see is that in the zinc consumption shall increase by 2% more or less. So lower than in the past, but still growing. And for the reason that we know that more and more water is being required for the mining companies to maintain their output of copper, and this requires a lot of energy. If we advance a few slides, now if we can go to page number 12, which is new, the new slide that we included in our presentation. Basically, to show to you the difference between what we have in our plant as our total capacity of our plant compared to what is called the contractable efficient capacity. So today we have 2,100 megawatts that's going to increase to 2,445 in 3 years from now once IEM-1 is in operation. But the net sellable capacity is much less. Today we are at 1,242 megawatts, and this is basically after deducting the losses in transmission, the spinning reserve that every plant must have, the plant maintenance, some forced outage maintenance, and everything added up, what we can sell or what we should sell as a project operator is more or less today 1,300 megawatts. So 800 for coal and 500 and something for gas. And so today, what we are actually selling is, as you know, more or less 9,000 gigawatt hours per year. So more or less a bit more than 1,000 average megawatts. So these numbers here are megawatt hours per hour. So which means that we do have more or less 300 megawatts of available capacity to sell, which is, as you know, the gas-fired plant. But in the future, with the new PPAs that we got at the end of last year, and with IEM, the new coal plant, being commissioned, we are going to increase gross capacity to 2,400, as I said, but also the contractable efficient capacity to a bit less than 1,600 megawatts. And this from a, I'd say, supply side. From a demand side, our new PPA for 5,000 megawatts, gigawatt hours per year, if we add this to our current PPA minus the PPA that are going to expire in the next year, you can see that we are pretty much sold. We're pretty much contracted this year and in the next year. On the next slide, page 13, I think here that what is that's not new, what I think is important to highlight is that the new PPA that we got, that we earned in December of last year, as of today, is more or less $122 per megawatt hour, is the monolithic price, so energy plus capacity. And this is, so it means that it's a very good PPA, a very good price, for 15 years. Huh? And this, on page 14, this just to clarify, on page 14, this is the weighted average overall indexation for electricity and capacity. In the past, we used to present here only the revenues from electricity, but here we added up and we put the total indexation of our revenues for electricity and capacity sales, of which more or less one-third of the whole, I would say, power sales is represented by capacity, and two-thirds is electricity. So the capacity sales is one-third, and it's basically fully indexed to US CPI and PPI. So when you see here 45%, 44.8% indexation to US CPI and PPI, a big chunk of it, more or less 33%, is the capacity sales. And this indexation of coal and gas, I think, is a huge strength of the company that allow us to more or less have stable margins over time. So that's why, despite the decrease in revenues of 8% that we saw this year compared to last year, our margins are pretty much the same. On page 15, that's also new. Page 15 complements the information shown on page 12. It's our biggest contracts over time. So you can see here that we have, as of today, the three big contracts existing today, the ones with Codelco, the ones with ML, and the ones with Antofagasta PLC, that these three groups of clients represent more or less two-thirds of our sales, and they have a average remaining lifetime of 11 years. As a whole, our average remaining lifetime is also 11 years, because although we have some minor PPA that are going to expire in the short term, the big PPA in the SIC is going to start in 3 years, and this is for 15 years, as I said. So all in all, we are going to maintain our 11 years as long-term PPA player, but in a much more balanced situation. So we're going to sell not only the SIC, but also in the SIC. We are going to increase from more or less 20% in sales to a distribution company, and then to more or less 40-45% in total to regulated customers in the SIC and in ML. and the difference, so 55% more or less, will be the sales to mining companies, which today represents 80%. So a much more balanced and solid portfolio. On page 16, the tariff with the metal is reducing over time as expected because of the way the tariff is indexed to Henry Hub and CPI. So Henry Hub is still below $3 per million BTU. So the Henry Hub reflected in the tariff of ML is still higher than this. So that the tariff of ML until September was at more or less $87 per megawatt hour energy component, and is now going to reduce to 81. So there will be a $6, 8% more or less reduction in the energy component of a tariff with ML as from now, November. And if the Henry Hub keeps the same number as of today, there shall be a further reduction in the near future, or in April, in fact, in the tariff of ML. Why? Because, as you can see in the chart, the dark orange line, which is the Henry Hub monthly average, is still below the light orange line, which is the Henry Hub reflected in the tariff with the ML. So as long as the dark orange is below the light orange, we have a downward trend in the tariff with the ML. On page 17, that's the cost of supply, the supply curve, that how we source our energy to deliver power to our customers. So basically from self-generation, as you can see here, our weighted average cost of generation plus spot purchases amounted to $54 per megawatt hour in total, including here the system over cost that we have to pay, and part of it we pass to our customers, while the average selling price is $104. And this is the gross margin of the company, and this is more or less stable over time, as I said before. And another good news on page 18, sobrecostos, or overcost, this is starting to go down again, basically for 2 years. First, today, the more availability of power in the thing for efficient power, more renewables being commissioned there in the thing over time, and also less bottlenecks in transmission. So throughout this year, the amount for ECL, the program of ECL in sobrecostos, is $14 million lower than last year. And this trend shall continue. So next year, when there's more available capacity being commissioned in the sink, for example, with commission of Cochrane and Keller, there will be more efficient capacity in the sink, so the sobrecostos shall continue to go down over time. And just as a reminder, today, most of the sobrecostos we pass through to our customers. On projects, on page 20, as I said, IEM-1 is progressing according to schedule. But here, one thing that's important is that IEM-2 is not here anymore. It used to be here, not here anymore. Because as you probably have read in the press, ENGIE has stated that it will not develop more on coal. So the existing business and the existing projects are going to be kept. So IEM-1 is being built, will be built, and nothing changed on IEM-1. But IEM-2 is not anymore in the pipeline not anymore being ready to build, as I can say. We're still evaluating what to do with IEM-2, whether we sell the project or what we just freeze it and put on hold. Today, there's no decision whatsoever on IEM-2 what to do with the project. But what is clear is that we are not going to build it on our own anymore. On page 21, I think here the only thing that is new here is that the total capex of the first coal plant and the new port is slightly lower than the number that you have seen before. Before we said that it was more or less $1.1 billion in total. Now it's $1.066, basically slightly lower cost due to the devaluation of the peso. Part of this cost is in pesos. We had made in the past some hedges. So the best estimate as of September for the capex of IEM1 plus support is $1.066. The same is valid on page 22 with 10. 10, the number that we had before it was $860 million, but this was as of end of 13, which was the same reference date for the ETP. But as of today, with the hedges that we put in place to protect the capex fluctuation, and with the devaluation of the peso, the best estimate as of September 15 for 10 is $780 million, including contingencies, including a buffer for surprises. So, I mean, that's the approved amount for 10. Hopefully, we can not spend the whole amount, but here is there's some buffer for surprises, and there's always surprises. But anyway, the best estimate as of today for 10 is $780 million. And by the way, on 10, as you know, we are advancing on the sale of 10. We're looking for a partner to get 6% of the company, and this is advancing pretty well. The shortlist bidders asked us to give them more time for the binding bids that they're going to make, and these binding bids are probably going to take place at the middle of November. On page 23, you see here the how the 10 line is designed. So 10 is the blue line. That's also the purple part, which is the 10 additional transmission line strips, which are assets being built by 10, but for the future use of ECL. So it's basically a substation within the ECL site in the unit, plus a 13 kilometers line to connect this new substation called 10 GIS to the start of 10, which is a substation plus chambers. So these assets are part of 10, but will be paid by ECL. They are not part of the trunk revenues of 10. So on top of the $76 million that are the regulated revenues of 10 that I mentioned before, ECL will pay an additional amount to 10 of more or less $6-7 million. So the total revenues of 10, if we add this $6-7 million, will be more or less $83 million per year. If the cost of 10 as of today is more or less $8 million. That's the cost that we expect that 10 will have during operations. So basically, 76, the revenues from trunk, plus 7 from the revenues from ECL, so 83, minus 8, it means that the EBITDA of 10 will be more or less $75 million per year. Going forward, on here on page 24, nothing renewed. We are advancing on the construction. We are finishing the negotiations with the owners of the land to get the 100% of the easement. It's advancing well. It's not the bottleneck of the project. 88% is already paid, and we believe that a big chunk of the 12 that is here still missing, we're going to get within a few months. So now, on page 25, the numbers from the 10 revenue scheme. So 41% of the trunk revenues of 10 will be indexed to the Chilean inflation, and 6% more or less in dollars to the US CPI. And that's the numbers that I mentioned, so the 74 plus 9, $84 million, the revenue of 10 as of October, as of today, $76 million, the total revenue of 10 shrunk, plus the tolling fee payable by ECL for this non-trunk asset. Now, on page 26, our new portfolio, we have on shelf some new capacity to be built, El Aguila and Calama in the sea. But I would say that our new frontier is the sea. So we are advancing on developing new renewable projects and gas-fired projects in the sea. So renewable meaning not only wind and solar, but also hydro capacity that we are looking for opportunities, as well as some gas-fired plants. Nothing to be announced so far, still pretty incipient, but just to let you know that we're actively looking to grow in the city. So now, advancing a couple of slides, page 28, that's the updated CAPEX table that with the new numbers for 10 IN. And this also reflecting that we are going to have more or less 20% of equity in 10 and 80% of project finance in 10. In the past, what we had informed is about a 30-70, so 30 equity, 70 debt. But as we advance in the discussion about the project finance for 10, we are now comfortable to say that what we expect now is 20% in equity in 10 and 80% in debt. Project finance in 10, which means that the 50% stake that ECL will have in 10 means that ECL itself will have to inject 10% of the capex of 10 into 10 as equity. So the bold line is the cash requirement from ECL as a whole, from its own capex, so the current business plus IEM and the port, plus the 10% to be injected into 10. And this to be financed part with our own cash flow and cash generation, part with the new senior debt, and most of it we already signed. We signed this $270 million revolving credit facility committed with 5 banks at the end of June. We so far have not drawn anything from this line, basically because our own cash position and our own cash flow has been more than enough to fund this capex. But we are probably going to draw it from the line pretty soon. But nothing so far. Advancing now a bit more to page 31. So pretty much stable sales in generation this year compared to last year. And you see here on the bottom right of the slide, the downward trend that we saw in the last year on prices, basically because of the indexations of RPPs. On page 32, some more information on how we performed this year. So on the EBITDA, as I mentioned, the two most important reasons were the performance for our generation plant, but also the lower OPEX in dollars, the OPEX in pesos. This represents more or less $11 million. So more or less $8 million in O&M and $3 million in SG&A. So in total, a bit less than $11 million of lower cost in dollars because of the devaluation of the Chilean peso. And also, on the negative side, we have slightly lower margins when compared to the 9 months of last year. Specifically to the third quarter of last year, which was very, very high, a very high basis, not only because of the take-or-pay provisions that affected possibly our numbers last year, but also the very high MLPPA margin because of the way the PPA with ML is indexed, with this delay of every 6 months. But also, we had some higher provisions this quarter or this year. And one very important that took place in September of this year, we launched an early retirement plan, which had a cost of $3 million this year. And we and this to reshuffle our personnel, and we expect some lower costs in the future. So on a graphic way, on page 33, you see here that basically we had two non-recurrent effects, one plus six, which is some insurance proceeds that that we got, but also last year we had another minus six or plus six last year proceeds from the settlement with our EPC contractor from CTA and CTH. A settlement that was closed this year, or last year, sorry. And last year it was an impact of $6 million. So six with six, these two things compensate each other. So basically, the most important reason for the increase in the comparison is the devaluation of the Chilean peso. On a net income comparison, I mean, on top of the increase in EBITDA, which was $5 million pre-tax and $4 million post-tax, there was also this reduction in the lower financial expenses for two reasons. First one, the prepayment of the project financing CTA last year that was replaced with a new bond, but also because some of the costs that of our CAPEX with IEM that are made on a corporate basis within ECL, they are capitalized. So this contributed with plus $5 million in net result. The negative side is the non-recurrent tax effects. And here, the most important one was for the arbitrage with Codelco, that, as you know, the settlement was for $10 million. They were requiring a much higher amount. And this $10 million produced a $3.5 million non-recurrent tax effect here in Chile, which is called gastos rechazados. On top of that, there's also the increase in deferred tax liability because we do apply tax depreciation on certain of our assets, for example, on CTA. And this creates a liability in the future that is collected, is recognized today in our P&L. So it's higher tax on a P&L basis, but lower cost on a tax basis. So what I mean is that part of this $9 million is not cash. And also, there's an $8 million impact here for the FX difference because of this assets that we have in our balance sheet in pesos. For example, all the VAT that we are making in our new CAPEX, which is huge, this VAT is in pesos. So we have this asset in pesos with this huge devaluation of the Chilean peso, specifically in the third quarter of this year, when the Chilean peso closed the quarter at $698 pesos per dollar. And these assets in pesos are worth less dollars. So this is reflected in the P&L. So now, if we advance a few more slides, on page 37, how net debt evolved over time. Basically, a increased net debt because of the consumption of cash. And this is our CAPEX on 10 IEM and a new port was much higher than our capacity to generate cash. So we are consuming part of our cash in hand. But still, we are in a 1.6 net debt over last 12 months EBITDA. So still pretty much comfortable. And this number of net debt is going to keep increasing over time as we consume our cash. And in the future, as we start to draw from our credit facility that we signed with the five banks. And just to finish on page 39, this to illustrate how the share price had evolved over time. Since the beginning of last year, when we started with the 10 first, when 10 was still a private line to connect the stick and the thing. Since then, and the new PA and the improvement in the operation of the company as a whole, our share price has increased by 40%, more or less, in the last year and a half, more or less. So this is not only because of the new products, but also because the basis, I mean, the current operation of VCL is, I'll say, much more solid and much more defended against fluctuations. So we are delivering, I guess, a better performance, but also delivering the growth that the market was expecting, and we are now going to get with 10 in IGN. Having said that, thank you, and now we are open for questions.
Thank you. The floor is now open for questions. If you have a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone at this or any time. If at any point your question is answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing the pound key. Questions will be taken in the order they are received. We do ask that when you poll your question, that you please pick up your handset to provide optimum sound quality. Please hold while we poll for questions. And our first question comes from the line of David Galanti.
Hi, and good morning, everyone. First of all, I would like to congratulate you on the results for this quarter. If you don't mind, we have three questions we'd like to ask. The first one concerns coal generation costs. As we were running numbers in our model, and it seems that the cost per megawatt hour of generating with coal has gone up. Maybe you please give us some color on this. Second question is about operational expenses. As SG&A costs have decreased 30% year-on-year, maybe most of it is FX, but we would like to know the reasons behind this change. Also, D&A costs increased 32%, more or less. So maybe this increase is related to the construction start of the new projects. And finally, last question is about the line Otras Ventas, other sales, which has increased to 12 million from 4 million last year. Basically, we'd like to know what is included in this line and why such an important growth. Thank you.
Thank you. And let's start with the last one. The other sales, there are two things. The first one, the insurance is there. So there was the $5.6 million of insurance proceeds, which is there in this other income. And the second thing, it's basically accounting. We were in arbitrage with Sokomich and for several years, and it was closed. We had last year already made the provision for this arbitrage, and it was $4.7 million that was provisioned last year. And it was closed this year, and we lost. So what we did was that we reverted this provision and had a lower sales line. So basically, there is a plus $4.7 million for the reversion of this provision, and that is impacting the other revenues. But also there is a minus 4.7 in sales. So in EBITDA, it's zero impact. There's no impact, neither in cash or EBITDA. And basically, these other ingresses, auto ingresses, is higher because of this accounting, the way that we accounted it. That explains the increase. The OPEX and SG&A, we are trying to grow into the SIC. So we are here throughout this year restructuring the company and preparing the company to grow in the SIC. So we are reinforcing certain areas of the company, specifically in commercial parts, the client search, regulation, etc., but also in business development. So these costs So this we got more people, and that's why you see that there's some increase throughout this year. If you compare apples to apples, at the end, because of effect devaluation, we see here this positive effect of the devaluation. But we are also looking for more opportunities in the SIC. That's why you see this slight increase in SG&A. And the first question, what was it? The first one?
It was regarding the cost of fuel. So basically, it seems that when you run our numbers in our models, it seems that the cost of generation of generating with coal have gone up.
The cost of generation with coal with a hole.
Exactly, the fuel cost.
I mean, that's strange because the cost of coal as a whole, it's not increasing on a constant basis throughout the company. What we do have is that this year, I mean, the new emissions law that was approved a few years ago required us to operate and to reduce emissions of particulate matter, of NOx and SOx. So that's why we invested a lot of money, $176 million in total, since 2011, to prepare our plants to operate according to the new law. And the new law, I mean, there are different milestones. The first one was with particulate matter that started already, which is the back filters that we start installed there in the Hyun and Tokopedia. But that's purely CapEx that was incurred over time. And now, for the SOx and NOx reduction, the milestones are different. The first one is in Tokopedia. So in Tokopedia, the coal plants of Tokopedia started to generate now at the end of June of this year using hydrated lime, so cal hidratada. And that's to reduce the and to comply with the new regulations. That's part of the cost to do business. And this is going to apply in Mejillones as from July of next year. So end of June of next year. So indeed, in Tokopedia, there is a slight increase in the cost of generation because of the use of hydrated lime. That started at the end of June, but that's not yet the case of Mejillones. So I don't know what your model is saying, but there should be no difference in Mejillones so far. And the coal itself, it's basically pretty much the same price. There's no big fluctuations in the last months in the coal prices. Huh? So I if you want, you can send your numbers and we can take a look at it.
Okay, thank you so much, Carlos.
Our next question comes from the line of Mitchell Moss.
Hi, just a question on the 10 transmission line. Looking over the quarter-to-quarter presentations, it looks like last quarter you'd envisioned a 70-30 debt to equity structure for the financing, and now I guess it's 80-20. Can you just go into the thinking behind the increased leverage for the project?
Sure. We, until the last presentation, until the last quarter, as you're right, we were indicating that there should be a 70-30% ratio between debt and equity in 10. So a long-term, non-recourse project finance for 10 with 7% of the capex. Since then, we have advanced in the discussions with the banks. We are progressing in the project finance. We have received detailed, still indicative proposals for several banks. We had made a short list of banks. We have sent already requests for proposals for these banks so that they can send us in December with firm proposals. So this is, so with this, we are today much more comfortable to say that the leverage to expect for the profile of 10 is going to be higher than what we thought. So higher meaning around 80%, can be a bit less, a bit more. We are pushing to have it as high as possible. So today, what our best estimate should be 80% instead of 7%. And this is, but it's not guessing. It's based on what we are seeing from the market, based on this proposal that we got from the banks. And why is this? For two reasons. The first one is that TEN has now its revenues confirmed. Its trunk revenues are now known. So the banks are now, I would say, more comfortable to give us higher leverage. And the second thing is here in Chile, the 10 line, I think, is a unique opportunity for the financing market, for the bank market, to finance such a regulated, long-term, countrywide, visible product. So if you add to this the fact that the mining companies themselves are not investing a lot today, so the banks had to put their capital to work. So we think that we can get a very good price and very long term and very high leverage for the project finance of 10 based on this sector.
And does this impact your consolidated credit metrics at all by carrying more debt at the project level? I mean, I guess if I put it a different way, does this just mean you have less?
I was speaking to you, but I was in mute. That's why you didn't hear my question.
Oh.
My answer.
usually that's the questioners. That's usually my problem, not your guys'
problem.
It happens
throughout the globe. But don't worry. What I was saying is that it does not impact any issue with consolidation or. It is still a non-recourse for finance today, as in the past. That's what we are going to defend towards the rating agencies, that is non-recourse. The only thing that it impacts is that it will require less cash out of ECI itself to inject into them. So at the end, the whole financing balance to fund the whole capex throughout the next 3 years can change a little bit, but this increase in leverage does not have any impact on whether this is going to be consolidated or not. From an accounting perspective, it will not. Accounting perspective, this with the sale of 10, we're going to have a co-control, it's a JV, so we will not have this debt on our balance sheet. From a rating agency perspective, it's a matter of convincing them and they being comfortable that this is a really non-recourse. And this will depend, of course, on everything that we managed to discuss with the banks, and that's what we are targeting for.
Okay. And just the other big thing is looking at slide 8, has there been any discussions or has there been any requests to renegotiate contracted prices with the copper producers, just given where copper prices are?
I mean, asking is free. So a lot of people ask. To go to your point, indeed, the mining companies themselves, as we all know, are under pressure to cut costs. That's a reality. So we have not reduced any price. But what we can do is, for example, we can take this as an opportunity. And for example, if we have a given contract that is going to expire in 2 or 3 years, We can have a small reduction and also extend the price at the term of the contract for certain years. This is part of the commercial negotiation with any provider. Today there's a lot of companies that are under pressure. As we all know that the Glencore is under pressure and Freeport-McMoRan with Elabra and Codelco and all the companies are fighting to reduce costs with the current copper price. That's not a rocket science. We do have very solid contracts, and we have, if it makes sense for us to reduce certain price or to give more flexibility, for example, in the consumption or in the pattern of consumption throughout the day or in the past two or certain costs, etc., it makes sense for us because with this we're going to get a overall more through extension of contracts or any other benefit, we can do so. But our PPEs are solid.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. I'm sorry, who was this?
The questioner was Mitchell Moss. This concludes the question and answer session. At this time, I would like to turn the floor back over to ECL for any closing remarks.
So thank you very much. And if you have any other questions or doubts, please don't hesitate to contact us through Marcela, myself, or Bernadette. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. This thus concludes today's presentation. You may disconnect your line at this time and have a nice day. 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 And have a nice day.